Are you feeling it? Are you getting ready? Are you getting excited? It's pre-E3, and wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Especially if you are one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run, we're going to be with you in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsor this week, HelloFresh. They're bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games and their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis. The guy who is pulling that E3 hype train out of the station, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. And you all raised $8,259. You all saved lives.
Nice.
And helped kids around the world.
Blew past your goal, man. Destroyed your goal.
Childhood cancer. Yeah. Unbelievable. I'm at a loss for words. In St. Jude, they set an ambitious goal. Their Play Live, this video game streaming fundraising campaign, they set an ambitious goal for themselves at $2 million. And they surpassed that, and you all were a big part of why that happened. So from the very bottom of my heart, thank you very much. It means the world to me.
Well, congrats, Christian. That's really awesome and laudable. And I'm so happy for you. I'm so proud of our listeners for helping that happen. I'm so proud of my Golden State Warriors for helping it happen as well. They are playing in the finals as we speak. And yeah, what a great cause. And I'm so glad you do this every year. And I'm so glad our community rallies around that. You don't have to stop, by the way. You know, you can always keep donating to St. Jude's. It's a very worthy cause all year round. Man, this is going to be a jam-packed episode. We got lots to talk about. The pre-E3 news is just juicy and fun. Already stuff. Big stuff being announced, being confirmed, being trailered. We're going to talk about it all. We've got big games, fun games to talk about. Lots of incredible VR stuff is happening. And we have pre-E3 predictions for the big show that's happening right around the corner. And we've got an awesome guest to do it with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, DLC stands for deducing what's likely at the conference, because it is the week before E3. We do have our predictions, and we have our favorite annual third chair to join us for the pre-E show. It's tradition now from GameRant.com, Mr. Anthony Taormina. Hey, Anthony, how are you?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you? I'm here for my my annual checkup on the E3s.
On the threes that are E's. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting year this year, and I'm excited to talk about it. So let's get right in and start the way we always do with story. Oh, actually, let's start a way we don't always do, but it's pre-E3 week, so we got to start this way. Choo-choo indeed. We got to get that hype train going before we get into the show, the way we always do. It's story of the week.
Story of the week. It's the story of the week. Story of the week. It's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by visiting our subreddit. That's 5x5dlc.reddit.com, or by sending us an email. We love getting your emails at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Anthony, you are our guest. So you get first pick of stories. Lots of craziness as we get close to E3. Everybody is, you know, everybody wants to be, they have their own spotlight, their own moment in the sun. And so it feels like stuff that used to be announced at E3 or debuting in E3 is spilling over into the weeks leading up to E3. So we got lots of news. So Anthony, you get first pick. What's your story of the week?
I feel as though there is a certain thing that is really the story of the week, but I think one of you would be better suited to choose it. So I'm going to choose Call of Duty Modern Warfare Reveal.
Yeah, we got a new Call of Duty Modern Warfare coming from Infinity Ward. It's called Call of Duty Modern Warfare, which
not to be confused with Call of Duty 4 : Modern Warfare.
Right, that 4 is the differentiator. Good.
Or Call of Duty Modern Warfare Remastered.
I think that's still Call of Duty 4.
Call of Duty had a 4 in it.
I feel like we need Vanilla Ice to do the theirs goes and then ours goes about the difference between his. Anyway, that's a deep cut. But anyway, yeah, it's it's going to drive a lot of retailers nuts when they put it into their back ends, I'm sure. So
right. Well, let's not put it into our back ends. Hey-o, it comes out October 25th. It touts a, quote, reimagining from the ground up. Now, that's a buzz phrase, but it certainly seems like they are attempting something that's a little more nuanced than your typical Calls of Duty. And they're trying to add some, I think, real emotional tension, some real world headlines and real world ambiguity as far as who's the good guy and who's the bad guy. It's going to have lots of fancy schmancy graphics capabilities. They're supporting 4K HDR, DirectX ray tracing on PC, PBR decal rendering system, which I didn't even know that Pabst Blue Ribbon had decal rendering, but I guess it does. World volumetric lighting, all kinds of buzzwords there as well. It certainly looks real pretty. Captain Price is back. Anthony, what do you think? Well, you saw the trailer, no doubt. Yes. What do you think of it?
I mean, I'm into it. I think that it was a direction most people didn't expect them to go, obviously, because they went backwards. I don't know. On the one hand, it seems like the simplest place to go in a time when the Call of Duty franchise is a little bit in flux, or reportedly in flux, as far as, you know, the behind the scenes rumblings that the next iteration is totally being rewritten. Like, this seems like, okay, let's play it safe. And it seems super smart. It seems like the way to go. But at the same time, it's hard not to be like, well, you tried future, didn't really work out. You tried past, didn't work out. And now you're just basically repeating what you did. Like, are we going to is next year's game going to be Call of Duty Black Ops? And we're just going to do like a reimagining of Mason and the Numbers? That stuff seems a little... I don't know.
It seems like that's possible based on those behind-the-scenes rumblings you're talking about.
So I'm eager to see more of it. I think that the approach to the campaign, I'm really excited that they're sticking to the campaign because I was super bummed out about them taking it out in favor of Battle Royale and whatever.
Yeah, last year was like Call of Duty doesn't need a single player. We're here for multiplayer. Yeah, this year it's like all about that single player, bro.
Yeah.
You know, you want it. You know, you love it. The single player campaign is where it's at. It's like, oh. Okay.
I am one of those people that plays the campaign. I'm one of the five.
No, dude, I think the three of us are three of the five.
Yeah,
because for sure. I think that's what we all come. That's what brings us to the yard.
I'm definitely looking forward to playing it. I'm excited to have a campaign. It seems like they're doing interesting stuff. I don't know about there was a quote floating around somewhere that said that they kind of were inspired by the No Russian level from, I think, Modern Warfare 2.
10 hours of No Russian.
Yeah, which seems like they're just going to kind of, you know, hammer us in the face with this, like, war is real, war is gritty on the streets. And I don't know if we necessarily need that in our video games.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see. I think that was one of the criticisms of Modern Warfare after the first one was they had so much success with it kind of subverting your expectations, making you play a character and then having that character die. And then in the second game and the third game, they're like, oh, here's a character that you've never seen before. Guess what? They just died. You know? Yeah. So we'll see how it all plays out. But I think this is an interesting approach to revitalizing Call of Duty. And I really do want to see what they do with the multiplayer because they could very easily play that safe or they could go in its own direction. I assume we'll see more of that in a week or so.
Christian, I would venture to say that the reason No Russian worked or was so impactful at the time was because video games weren't really doing that. Video games were still on the more arcadey side of their evolution into storytelling, into a storytelling medium. And the fact that that game tried something as morally gray, even reprehensible as that level, I think was shocking, but it was brief and it was because games weren't really doing that. And also because the world, I think, didn't feel quite as, what's the word? Scary. Maybe it did. I don't know. It's post 9/11, so maybe it was still scary. I'm just trying to say, what do you think about this tone? What do you think about what they're trying to accomplish here? What do you think about the trailer?
Yeah, I think I'll believe it when I see it. I hope Anthony's right. I want to be optimistic about it. To me, I was trying to think of a word that's less than desperate, but I think it reeks of whatever is less than desperate, where I think to me right now, having not played it, it seems as if the franchise is very stale, where it has become still a great selling franchise from year to year and some of the best left trigger, right trigger, you know, gameplay around. I'm curious how the new engine might affect that. Because 60 frames per second, and it's really been fast and snappy gameplay for decades now, or over a decade now. But I feel like it shows that they don't quite know what they're doing or how to innovate in the space, where before, was it 3 years ago, it's like, we're going back to World War II. It's what you all wanted. It's where Call of Duty cut its teeth. World War II, we're back. You're going to love it. And then it was, guys, Battle Royale is where it's at. We're going back. We're doing Battle Royale. Look at this. And now it's Modern Warfare. It's where it's at. It's where the current iteration of Call of Duty became the blockbuster that it is. And like, cool, but like, what are you, Call of Duty? Like, what are you now in 2019 that's not copying another successful trend or looking back to when you were innovative and interesting in the space? And I think it's something that God of War, also a nightmare on retailers' internal listings, did well. And something that Doom, also retailer listing nightmare, 2016 did really well, where they evaluated what they are and where they were from and where they're going and found ways to be interesting and relevant going forward. And it appears to me that Call of Duty has not figured that out. I think a lot of the talk that they've said about the game and it's a gray area and this, that, and the other, I feel like I've heard that before from them. I believe it was Waypoint in Austin that had a really interesting article about the tone of the presentation and how they tried to pitch it as like, you know, war is ambiguous. It's a gray area. We're really going to make you think about it. Now, please welcome to the stage the expletive guy that does guns like expletives. And it was like, these guns are amazing. You put it in your mouth. You put it everywhere. Look at it. It's beautiful. Kill stuff with it. And it's like, yeah okay. That's Call of Duty for you. Like, I'm not expecting this to be a nuanced game that makes me feel in any way, shape, or form where I'm mowing down thousands of people. I hope to be wrong, but to me, Call of Duty campaigns, and even including No Russian, in my opinion, are as subtle as a sledgehammer. And
sure,
I don't see this game bucking that trend. And it's been tried before, not necessarily by them. What was the EA Beards guys? Medal of Honor.
Yeah.
Medal of Honor Beards.
Tier one, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They tried to do that as well. And I don't think you can have your cake and eat it too. I think Spec Ops The Line did an excellent job of it 5 years ago.
Hilarious.
How long has that been? I'm a young guy.
Hilarious. Five. That's how you know you're old. Everything is 5 years ago.
Yeah, everything's 5 years ago.
You guys remember when the first Aladdin came out 5 years ago?
So yeah, I hope to be wrong. I hope it's great. I think it looks beautiful. But
we've been doing this show for 5 years, Christian. You know, the Spec Ops The Line guys came on Week and Confirmed, and we hung out with them after the game had been out for like a year.
Okay, so I get it, Jeff. You're older than me, and I'm 21.
We're
okay.
Old.
What are your thoughts?
So let me say right up front, I think that the trailer visually is spectacular. I mean, it really – we're getting new consoles in like a year? And this is what's coming out now? It's crazy. Like, what are the new consoles going to bring visually to the table? Because this is, I mean, there's shots that look like GoPros stuck to helmets. And I'm like, yeah, no, if I just walked by a computer screen, I'd be like, oh, wow, somebody got GoPro footage of war? Crazy. I mean, it's extraordinary looking. And there is certainly part of me that wants to be very happy that they are they're claiming to grow a conscience, that that a game about, as you put it, wanton murder, and a lot of video games are, and I play a lot of shooters, so I'm not being holier than thou, but in a world where, I mean, we had another mass shooting this week and it barely made a blip on anybody's radar, I feel less and less thrilled making something that's super realistic and super gritty about war. I just get less and less excited about that because the real world is encroaching on my hobby, right? It is coloring my experience. And so part of me wants to laud them for this, at least lip service to having some sort of conscience, putting you in a position that maybe makes you think and not just makes you super excited to murder stuff. But I do believe that in order for that to have any weight at all, land with any impact at all, you have to make a game where there are interactions other than shooting. Call of Duty, at its very core, allows you to interact with the world in one way, and that is to pull a trigger.
Well, Jeff.
Yes, sometimes you get to press X to mourn.
Pay respects.
Press X to pay respects. Certainly sometimes that happens, few and far between. Pressing X to pay respects is not particularly compelling interaction as far as I'm concerned. So almost 99% of your interactions with the world in a Call of Duty game and in any shooter, but in, you know, we're talking about the Call of Duty franchise here, is do I shoot it or do I not shoot it? And almost always the answer is you shoot it. So how do you reconcile that? How do you go, well, I'm here to shoot the things and to kill the things, and you are expecting me to think about whether I should? That is the only thing you give me to do. So unless we're going to play a game where there are more interesting interactions than just shoot a thing, I don't think you have any chance to create the context that they seem to be claiming they're creating. And like you, Christian, I want to be wrong. I hope that when I play this campaign, and I'm kind of excited to play the campaign, it looks interesting and fun, but I like, spare me the sermonizing if all the missions are just, and then you kill everybody, because let's not even go there then. If you're not giving me a way to feel the thing and make a decision about it, then what's the point? If it's just like, oh, feel bad for doing this, but have fun doing this,
I agree with you, but I think the counter argument is the point is Shadow of the Colossus.
Okay, I see what you're saying in the sense that, you know, you're supposed to feel a compassion for the Colossi and yet murder them at the same time.
All you can do is kill in that game. And right. And I think to some extent, God of War, all you can do is kill in that game. It, you know, there's very little meaningful interaction that's not killing, but it's able to tell a story in a compelling way.
But the killing and the, yeah, I mean, in both Last of Us and God of War's situation, you're killing an other, right? And I mean,
Last of Us, I killed a lot of people.
That's true.
I killed a lot of people.
Yeah.
Especially towards the end. I killed a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there are ways to do that, but I remain skeptical that a game that really is all about pointing a gun at something and eliminating it is going to, I mean, because I feel like Last of Us allows you to have other kinds of interactions with that world.
I can throw a brick at it.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, I think you make a fair point. And I think it's a limitation of video games, and it's a limitation of 30 seconds of fun, right? Which is what video games are built on. So I very much yearn for the days of interacting in a more sophisticated way. I mean, I want holodeck, right? I want to go into a game and be Sherlock Holmes like Picard does. I want to go into a game and feel the weight of my actions in a way that video games don't currently give us. I still have fun playing arcade games. I still have fun shooting stuff. I do it all the time in video games. So
I'll be talking about it later in the show. It's a lot of fun.
Right. Anyway, really interesting to see what this Call of Duty ends up being and how close to that they get, or if it really is just a spin on something that's going to be much more familiar. Christian Spicer, lots more big, juicy stories this week. What's your story of the week?
I mean, I think my story of the week has to be, Jeff, that we were right.
I mean, I think every week is that.
Proving it yet again. Death Stranding got a release of 2021, just like we predicted.
Yeah, we're always right, man.
There was no update, no gameplay footage. The game's far away. They apologized and they said, probably expect it 2022. And, you know, sorry for the, just like a screen. It was like one screen, a tweet that came out from Kojima. Yeah. And it was like, my apologies. See you in 5 years.
We got to eat so much crow, man. This is, we were very wrong. Wrong about Death Stranding.
Before you guys start eating the crow, let's get to November.
Yeah. If November 8th comes, I guess that's when we actually eat the crow.
I mean, come on. We're wrong. I mean, Anthony, you're also wrong. We're all wrong.
Why am I wrong?
There's no way you thought this game was coming out this year.
I mean, I still don't believe that the game is coming out this year.
Anthony is loading his plate with more crow. He's like, I'll have seconds of that, please.
I mean, if I'm going to eat a little bit, I might as well double down and take my chances, okay?
Yeah, there's more crow where that came from. Okay, so what Christian is referring to, if you haven't been paying attention, is Death Stranding has a release trailer, has a final release trailer. Well, not final. I'm sure there'll be lots more of them. But has a actual release date, November 8th, PlayStation 4, Hideo Kojima's magnum opus, Death Stranding. And it came complete with 8 minutes plus of gameplay and cutscenes that really just explained exactly what this game is about.
You're president of expletive, Bridget. Best line.
Makes it super clear. What do you think about this, Christian? What do you think? I mean, you are a Metal Gear Solid fanatic. You love the Kojima. And this is Kojima unbridled. He is unleashed. He's got his own studio and he's ready to rock. What do you think? What do you make of this?
Yeah, I have a little Metal Gear limited Japanese poster over my shoulder. You can barely see it. Well, one, backing all the way up, the Horizon Zero Dawn engine, that Guerrilla Games engine, is incredible. Because
I think it is a hybrid. It is not. I don't think it's purely that engine, right? He used some tech from them, but they had proprietary, not proprietary, but they have original.
They brought their own ladder tech.
Yeah, you don't get any ladders like that in Horizon Zero Dawn. Extendo ladder, come on.
It looks incredible. Again, this game coming out, it seems like PlayStation is lining up the last little bit here with PlayStation 4.
And people were looking at these trailers as the game was approaching and going, well, this is proof that PlayStation 5 is coming because look at this. Yeah. Photorealism, these acting. And it's like, no, that's coming out on PlayStation 4.
It looks incredible. You mentioned the story seeming, I have no clue. I mean, it's full tilt Kojima, it seems like. So the thing that has, I like that. I like where, you know, Kojima's mind unlocked might take us. I think that's fascinating and exciting. What the trailer put me off of the most is I don't think the gameplay looked particularly interesting from what I could extrapolate out that you're doing. It was a lot of like running away, but still getting caught.
Let's read the marketing.
Cause that explains it.
Yeah. It's so clear. This is the press release. Exactly. Yeah. Quote, Death Stranding is a completely new type of action game where the goal of the player is to reconnect isolated cities and a fragmented society. It is created so that all elements, including the story and gameplay, are bound together by the theme of the strand or connection. That's part of it. Here's the other thing. Killing your enemies in the game is almost never the solution, and apparently every death will carry a consequence. Also, when you die, you never get a game over screen. You go to the upside down realm where you're tasked with searching for a way back to the living. So that's what the game is.
To be fair, That's kind of what we asked for about Call of Duty, right? Is giving you plenty to do that's not just killing.
Yeah. No, dude, on paper, this sounds like the game I've been begging for. This is like I've always railed against fail states. Don't give me fail states. Although Prey 1 called and wants its concept for what happens when you die back, because that's exactly what happened in the first Prey, is that you go to this like ghost realm and have to fight your way back. But I, you know, I rail against fail states. This is cool. I want a game that makes every death feel weighty. I think that's a really interesting thing that video games do all too infrequently. And yeah, that's awesome. So, I mean, if those are the stated goals of this game, I'm thrilled. I'm excited to see how they pull it off.
Anthony, where are you coming down on this? One, do you think you know, can you describe to me what the 30 seconds of fun of this game is? And two, where are you standing? What strand are you standing on?
Okay, here's what's going to happen. You're going to pop in the disc or your digital download. You're going to sit down. You're going to start to play Death Stranding. And about 45 minutes later, your controller is going to turn off because you haven't touched anything. And you've just been watching a cutscene. Finally, they're going to let you control it. And you're going to go, I don't even know what I'm doing.
Guys, no. I want to say... I particularly, and I think all of us, have been very cynical about this game, and I think it's time to go, hey, maybe this is something really special. It's actually coming out, which I didn't think it would ever do, and, you know, I've been making fun of all the goofy trailers, and but now we're finally getting a game that's coming. It's a real game. It's a game that sounds super ambitious and crazy. Maybe this is going to be amazing.
Sure, well, but are we – here's the thing. Are we saying this? Are we coming up with explanations or justifications or whatever because a auteur is involved? If this was just some random game from some random person and we watched a trailer during a press conference, we had no idea what it was. It said Death Stranding. There were no actors and it was just weird baby backpack stuff. You would be like, nah,
I want my baby back.
I'm
baby
good.
Back.
I'm good.
Like, but yes, Anthony.
Yes, but yes, Andrew, exactly. Yes. The auteur has made some of the greatest games of all time. So I think he has earned a bit of.
Well, but he's made some of the greatest games of all time, and they were all within the same genre and did the same thing.
Yeah, you're not wrong, but I don't know. I've shifted over. I'm in the boat of. I'm kind of excited about this. Like the motorcycle? Yeah. I mean, I'm into
I'll
it.
I'll play it.
I'm whatever that weird, like, drop your shadow backpack to create things so that the monsters don't get you. Into it. Extendo ladder? Into it. Stick a stake down and drop into wherever. Like, if you can do that anywhere. I mean, I'm thinking about Metal Gear Solid 5 and how crazy outside the box some of the technology allowed you to get. And if that's what we're talking about, if it's like instead of in Metal Gear Solid 5, all that tech was about eliminating enemies, putting them into balloons and sending them away or whatever you're doing, eliminating enemies. If this is more about the technology allowing you to just avoid dying and running away from combat, that's a really interesting idea. And maybe it's completely – maybe it is a completely new type of action game.
To be fair also, people go back and listen. I am well on the record saying I'm excited in this game and I trust in Kojima. Did I think it was coming out in 2019? No.
Did you think it was coming out in 2020? No.
Yeah, maybe. My question to you both, though, and to everybody, staying on the adding a little more crow, I'm like taking just like half a crow to add to my plate. Do you think that this is Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes? Like this is the
very short?
The prologue to the thing.
Oh, no. November 8th, we get Death Stranding... prologue.
You get Death Stranding, and then November 8th, 2020, we get Death. You know, like the strands have been connected, now play the game, or whatever it is.
That would be a horrible bait and switch. Yeah, that would be a rough bait and switch, man. I think they would.
My guess is no, but I am curious at the length and the open world nature of this game. And
I'm with you on that. It definitely seems like a game. It's so hard to talk about, like, for a game that's coming out in November and to not know a lot, to not, like, have this feeling of, like, people not saying, like, hey, we've seen the game played. And we're not going to see it at E3, we assume. So it's just,
yeah,
it can't really come out this year. It can't. There's just no way.
It does seem highly unlikely.
If this
but
game
it has
was
a,
coming out this they, year, why on earth would PlayStation say no to a booth or a press conference or anything? There's just
I know they could have pulled it. Could have pulled a full on Nintendo and just been about one game.
Yeah, because
this game would have had the legs to carry that. And it does seem crazy and I don't get it, but I'm no longer going to doubt this game. I'm no longer going to doubt it, which basically means I just gave it the kiss
of death. Just because you thought it wasn't going to come out in a certain date, you're no longer going to doubt it. I feel like I have to speak for the doubters here. I am with you, doubters. I don't know what it is even about or anything. There's a guy named Die Hard Man and then another guy named Dead Man. And he's just, Kojima is off the rails and he's just doing whatever he wants. And somebody maybe...
Anthony, to be fair, I do need to let our listeners know that Jeff and his wife were talking about growing their family, and instead Jeff just ordered the collector's edition with the baby pod, and that's the new member. They've named it and everything. So that's why Jeff,
I'm 100% in.
100% in.
It's not that I'm supporting Death Stranding, it's that I'm adopting it.
All right.
Well, we haven't gotten to E3 predictions, but one of my E3 predictions is that Sony is going to pull a Nintendo Direct with Death Stranding around E3, and it's going to be like even more info and craziness. Anyway,
fair enough.
What is my story of the week? There are two that are just written for me. I got to go with this tease from Larian Studios. I absolutely have loved Divinity Original Sin 1 and 2. This week, Larian put up a teaser on their website with a big old Roman numeral 3. That's all it is, which, of course, you know, we've had Divinity Original Sin 1. We've had Divinity Original Sin 2. It would certainly lead one to believe Divinity Original Sin 3 is around the corner. But no, evidently some snooping of the HTML by Twitter user at Kunkin and confirmed by Kotaku has led to a whole bunch of hints that the Roman numeral 3 is actually in reference to Baldur's Gate 3, which is the Dungeons and Dragons universe games that we haven't. Baldur's Gate 2 came out in 2001, so it has been 18 long years since a Baldur's Gate official game has come out. And if the guys that made Divinity Original Sin 1 and 2, which is a top-down, isometric, deep, expansive, story-driven role-playing game, are in charge of Baldur's Gate, which is a top-down, isometric, deep, expansive role-playing game, I don't know what to even do with myself. I don't even know what to do with it. I mean, this is catnip for me. So I'm very excited. Anthony, what do you make of this?
It seems exciting. It's not my genre of choice, but I know that there were a ton of people very excited by this. The Divinity games are super beloved by, you know, people that like that genre, and I think it's a perfect match. I think it's exactly what, what developers like that work on. You know, you work on something, you work on your own property, and then somebody says, hey, we want you to take on this property that essentially inspired you, and now you get the reins, and then you do a great job with that, and then, you know, you get the clout of the property and the skills of the developer combined, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, actually, my only downside, or not downside, but counter argument to my excitement is there's not much different between them doing Divinity Original Sin 3 and Baldur's Gate 3. Like, effectively, they're going to be, I would be happy either way. Like, whatever the 3 is referencing, I'm in. Even if it is Divinity Original Sin 3, I'm just as excited. I think Baldur's Gate 3 is a fun thing because those games have history and it's Dungeons and Dragons and stuff. But I'm not really more excited about that than I would be for Divinity Original Sin 3. I just want these guys to make more great role-playing games. So, I mean, I don't know. This news is cool, but it's like, just keep going, Larry, and you're awesome.
I think the difference is, I mean, it's what you hinted on there. The difference is Baldur's Gate, because it's been dormant for longer, like bringing this back from this this team that's made these games that have been similar. You know, oh man, I'm just blanking on his name. Sonic Mania. It's not Matt Makes Games. That's Celeste. Someone in the chat will correct me. People listening, I apologize. His name is dropping from me. But he's been in the Sonic community and doing levels and mods and whatever. And then Sega said, like, make our next Sonic game. And right. It was like, he wasn't making, you know, fast Porcupine Dude. It was Sonic. And it was amazing. And so it's like, right. Yeah, you're making Baldur's Gate 3. And hopefully it means additional resources than what they would have had to do Divinity before. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm stoked. Hopefully this is a tease for E3 reveal. So I'm hoping, I mean, Larian has basically my highest confidence of any developer at this point. They do their audience right. They are very open. They're very audience friendly. Their games are full of value. They listen. They really started, I mean, I think the first Divinity was a Kickstarter, and then mm-hmm. it grew and it became this huge thing. And then the second one, they got enough funding to actually do full voice acting, instead they had more resources. And so it really feels like this, you know, this organic growth that has resulted in them playing in the big leagues. And I love that. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
One more story I want to talk about just because it's crazy, and we have to talk about it. I think it came out today as we're recording this. News that Cuphead is coming to a new platform, and that platform is Tesla's. Cuphead is going to be playable on Tesla cars, evidently. Not the entire game, just the first world, Inkwell Isle 1 section of the game. I guess the storage requirements aren't the storage limitations aren't conducive to bringing the entire game of Cuphead, but it's coming to Model 3, Model S, Model X. Elon Musk revealed this in a podcast that they do, and evidently they've been working hand in hand with a studio, MDHR, which is the developer of Cuphead. MDHR said that the only way they would allow this to happen is if the game looked, quote, nice and clean with a very high frame rate. I am a Tesla Model 3 owner. I'm very excited about this. And also, there are games already on the Tesla screens. The OS in Tesla gets updated all the time with new games. Most of them are Atari games, and they allow you to plug in a controller directly into the car. You can plug in a USB controller. Evidently, Cuphead is going to require that. It won't be able to play with the touchscreen. But literally all we've had so far is old school Atari games like Missile Command and I mean, I can't even remember all the other ones that are on there. But that's quite a leap to Cuphead. But this is nuts. Oh, I should mention also, because I already got a lot of tweets about this. You can only play even the games that are already on it. You can only play them when you're parked. So if the car is not in park, you can't do this. So everybody's like, well, you're going to crash. It's not about that. It's not about driving on the road playing video games. It's you get somewhere and you're like, I forgot my Switch. I want to play some video games. You can do that.
I was going to say, to be fair, Cuphead's out on Switch, which you can play while driving down the road.
Yeah, in your Tesla, you can put on autopilot and just play your Switch.
Yeah,
I've done that.
There's no way. If this is the reason you finally play Cuphead, Jeff, I will self-drive myself to your driverless car, and I will slap you.
This is how I finally play Cuphead, you guys.
No.
Why no?
Because the difficulty instantly turned you off.
I know, but now I'm in my car.
Oh, no. Yes. So now you can spend 45 minutes on a boss and then drive home really just feeling great about yourself. Just like, stupid sunflower. Oh, my God. It just.
Yeah. You're going to be outside your house. Inside your house, you have like a whatever it is, 80-inch 4K HDR TV with an Xbox One X. And you'll be like, sorry, babe. I got to play only the first level of Cuphead in my car. Maybe you play it when you're angry that you can't find a charging station. So you're like, well, if I'm going down, I'm using every last drop.
I didn't want to play Cuphead because I know me. I get frustrated and I'll just throw my controller, and I don't want to break a controller. So I'll play it somewhere then.
You get frustrated and ghost rides your whip just into a wall. You're like,
just like go 90 down the street.
This is so silly.
I love it. If this is the first of
the weirdest game choice.
It's Cuphead of all things. I guess Elon was a really big fan of Cuphead, man.
I mean, it's a cool game. It made my top five when we did the top five. Yeah. But still, come on.
I would love to come up with the least likely game. This would probably be, if we hadn't heard the story, if we had just been, let's come up with a joke list of the least likely games to be on the Tesla. I'd have been like, Return to the Obra Dinn, yeah. Cuphead, all these what's next? I'm tickled by the story. And as a Tesla owner, I'm down. Bring it on. Bring it on, Elon. All right, let's move on. We got so much to talk about. We do need to thank our sponsor, though, which is HelloFresh. Oh my gosh. Let me tell you, I have completely switched over to HelloFresh. Why? You know that I love cooking. I have fallen in love with cooking. Now I want to cook for my whole family. And HelloFresh, now that I have a one-year-old and a two-and-a-half-year-old, HelloFresh's family plan is the best. And that is what I completely have switched over to, is the family plan. They have several different plans. They have the family plan, the classic, the veggie. So, and you can switch between them at any time. But we like the family plan. It's larger. It's for more people. It's for four meals instead of just two. And they are all of them are 30 minutes or less. Oh, yeah, all of them. 30 minutes or less. And they take less than two pots or pans, fewer than two pots or pans. And so you can clean them up quick and you can make them quick. And I'm telling you, these meals are absolutely delicious. My wife and I just made the other night, we made maple mustard chicken. It was incredible. I think tomorrow night, my mom's going to be here. I think tomorrow night I'm going to cook for my mom from HelloFresh and make, I think I'm making risotto. There's an amazing risotto that we got. I would never make risotto for my family if it wasn't for HelloFresh, but they make meals that I can make easily, quickly. It's simple. They have all the ingredients sent to my door in pre-packaged, pre-sized containers. So I don't have to worry about going to the store. I don't have to worry about finding cool recipes. They do all of that for me. I have more time and my family gets to eat delicious homemade meals, and I get the joy and satisfaction of cooking for my family. It makes conquering the kitchen a reality with deliciously simple recipes. That's what they say, and I couldn't agree more. I'm absolutely in love with HelloFresh. We're gonna help. If you want to try this, you should. You should give it a shot. The family plan is for four people, but they have two-person classic, two-person veggie. It's easy. It's very fast. They got 20-minute meals. They got one pot wonders, all kinds of great stuff. And we're going to give you 80% off your first month of HelloFresh. If you go to HelloFresh.com/DLC80 and then enter DLC80 as your promo code, it's like receiving eight meals for free. So again, $20 off your first four boxes, which adds up to $80 off. Go to HelloFresh.com/DLC80, enter promo code DLC80. I'm telling you, it has changed my life. I absolutely love it. Give it a shot. All right. Before we get to the games that we have been playing, and there are many, we gotta talk a little bit about E3. This is the last episode before E3 begins. It's a very weird year. No Sony officially there. Some other companies not really there. But E3 is still the largest video game show of the year with big, big news. I'm sure Microsoft is going to make a big – they have actually called their shot this year and said they're going to come large. So I'm wondering what you guys are expecting. Anthony, do you have any predictions? Do you have any expectations for what this year's E3 is going to be?
I think that this is, it's an odd year, like you said. I think it's basically playing into Microsoft's hand as far as being the place to debut the games. They said that they're going to use 2 hours, maybe even a little more to show off stuff. So most likely
14 new first party games. Yeah, evidently. That's the rumor.
I feel like they're just going to have this press conference that is going to be memorable and maybe not memorable because of the, Xbox exclusives, but you would imagine that Cyberpunk will be there. You know, you'll probably some of the rumored games that have been flying around will be there.
Well, every year there's this discussion of, okay, for the big third-party games, what's going to be on Sony stage? What's going to be on Microsoft stage? They don't have any competition there this year. It feels like they maybe had their pick of the litter of what they wanted to put on their stage from all the big third parties, right?
Yeah. I mean, they honestly could make a show, because in the past they've definitely been the press conference that likes to introduce a lull, not to be like mean or anything, but their press conference does have those moments where they're like, okay, now we're going to talk to you about, you know, whatever service we have working on. Now they can just,
well, that's several years ago. I think the last 2 years it's just been like game from
sure
Microsoft.
Yeah, it feels, but I mean, that's also, I think, a byproduct of Sony saying, well, we have all these exclusives, we don't need you on our show. So yeah, I think it's going to be wall-to-wall games. I'm really excited to see what comes out of that, but also excited to see you know, what Ubisoft and I mean, Square Enix. I'm curious if we'll get, you know, Final Fantasy.
Before we get off,
okay, go.
Before we get off Microsoft, I just want to, do you not expect them to talk about the next iteration of the Xbox?
I do. I mean, at this point, even if they weren't planning on it, they have to. I think that Sony kind of forced their hand by, you know, participating in that article and giving at least a general overview of their approach. I feel as though Microsoft has to at least say, like, we are also working on one and it will have all of the capabilities that Sony talked about. Okay, bye.
I disagree. I could be very, very wrong here. I think their conference is going to be all about that next Xbox. And I think those 14 games are going to be for that next Xbox. I think they are drawing a line in the sand and saying, we are going to win the next generation. It is going to be about streaming. It's going to be about everybody getting on board and getting in at a very low price point. You're going to be able to get this hockey puck version of the Xbox for $50. And you are going to be able to pay Xbox Game Pass $10 a month, and you're going to have all of these games at the day they release, and you're going to stream. It's not going to cost you very much, and you're going to be able to, it's going to be amazing. I think that's going to be the war between them and Google with Stadia. I think Google is going to start talking exclusive games and pricing, and it's going to be a real rush to the streamed, inexpensive, low barrier to entry version of what game consoles are going to be. And I think Microsoft is going to talk about a lot of games. I could be wrong, but I predict they're all going to be coming for that next console.
But I think it's also worth mentioning that those 14 games, you could probably guess what over half of them are. You know, it's Halo. It's three Gears of War games.
I think we're going to see a Fable.
Yeah, maybe. It's Ori. Also, you have to keep in mind that, like, they said Xbox Game Studios, so that probably includes like Outer Worlds because they bought Obsidian. I don't know. I feel like all of the games that they could be talking about are largely games that have already been confirmed for Xbox One. I would be very surprised if you were right.
Maybe. I like I said, I could be very, very wrong, but that's my gut, is that they are conceding this generation and they're going hard on the next one. And they're going to tell us that Halo Infinite is a launch title for the next thing. And you can play it for $10 plus the cost of a streaming system. And it's going to be the easiest way to get into Halo ever. It's going to look amazing. That's my vision of what that press conference is going to be. Again, I could be very wrong. Christian, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're both right, to be honest. I think that Microsoft, instead of cutting their losses with this generation, like drawing a line in the sand, I think they're going to commit to what they've done now with the back half of the Xbox One lifespan and say Xbox is everything. Just like we brought Xbox Originals back, you know, OG Xbox games playable on Xbox One. There's a wide selection of Xbox 360 games that we've enhanced for 4K. I think they're going to keep leaning into that. And you don't have to get rid of anything. So any of these games that might be you know, coming out toward the end of the Xbox One console generation, Ori or Gears of War 5, they will all be future compatible on Scarlet or whatever the next thing is as well. So I think they're going to talk about a lot of games that are coming this year. Xbox has been big on that. Like, these are all games coming over the next 12 months. And I think they are going to talk about their Scarlet or whatever the next thing is in more significant ways. But I don't think they're going to just kind of burn the bridge back to the Xbox One platform. And they're going to try to carry those gamers over. And if it is the streaming service, I'm not sure why my Xbox One won't work for it. You know, like, why would I even need a new hockey puck? I think there's a lot to be said of all these games are coming out on the thing right now. And guess what? You already own the streaming version of our next platform. Yes, we're going to sell you a disc-based version that you can have under your entertainment center that can play all these things straight from the disc and have all the raw processing power. But if you just want to plug into the future, you're already plugged in. Scarlet launches, you know, February 2020 or something like that. There's a lot that Microsoft
November
can do.
November 2020, but yeah.
I'm just making updates at this point. I mean, I think with Death Stranding coming out November of this year, it's proof that I don't know what I'm talking about. So,
oh, we've had lots of that proof. You don't need
hey,
more
of that. Hey, Spystradamus called in and said, shut the heck up. Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on. I know, Anthony, you were transitioning into some of the big third-party press conferences, Ubisoft, Square Enix. I'm certainly very excited for both of those companies. I think it's likely this will finally be the year we see some sort of finally the year that we get a Splinter Cell game. And I don't really love that franchise, but I think that could be pretty exciting at an Ubisoft event. And then I think personally, my prediction for my own personal game of show will probably be Avengers if they show it playable, because it's my jam. I mean, it sounds amazing.
Are you in as a game? Are you interested in the Division and or Destiny and or Anthem Avengers? Is that your jam?
Yeah.
If that's what it is.
Is it though?
I don't know.
Do you think that's what it is, Anthony? Are you saying?
I mean,
you don't
that's,
think
what
that's
what
they—that's
what some people claim it is, and that it's not.
They're saying it's 4-player drop-in, drop-out co-op Avengers. You know, it does sound very Division.
Yeah, the description, yes, sounds like they're definitely trying to make Avengers Destiny. Which
the problem with that? I mean, I would play that. Yes. The problem with that, and I think this has been a problem where every superhero RPG has run into, is like, how do you do loot? You know, because loot is never satisfying in superhero games, because I don't want new gloves for Spider-Man. Like, I want to look like Spider-Man. I don't want, and part of the joy in those kinds of games is how, look how cool I look now. Look at the cool thing I just got. And a lot of games have solved that with, well, they give you stat increases, but no cosmetic increases or changes. And that's just not my personal pleasure center. You know, it's not like, oh, I got a +2 to the thing I already do. I want to look cooler and feel cooler. So that is a problem. And I don't know how they would rectify that in that template game.
The other way would be what the X-Men, Silicon Knights X-Men was, where, or the DC Universe Online, where you're not playing as an Avenger. You're like Agent Folsen.
But that's dumb. If I'm playing an Avengers game, I want to play as Thor and Hulk and Black Widow. And those are the characters that's what's bring me to the yard, bro. I mean, I bought the game with the Avengers on the title because I want to live the fantasy of being the Avengers.
I mean, what if you are an Avenger? A new one.
Avenger?
That's the thing.
What if you're Joe Avenger?
You're joining the Avengers. I don't know. I don't know. That could support the loot part.
Yeah. I mean, if they can come up with if they can come with a clever, I guess you can get new suits, Spider-Man, Sony Spider-Man had fun new suits for Spider-Man. If you could get new suits, new variant, but there's a upper limit to how that can go. Or if there's some way to get loot that that gives you something else that's cool, like maybe you're building up your own personal Avengers mansion or something that is less on your character and more a place that you can go visit. That's, I don't know. I'm not designing this. I just want to play as the Avengers, have their cool superpowers, play with my friends. Sounds like that's the game. So I'm in.
Yeah, I'm hopeful. I think there's a lot of ways that you can do leveling up. And I think, you know, you mentioned it a little bit where it's just stat stuff. But I think Ultimate Alliance, it looks like 3 is doing this as well. Then the past, it's been stat boost, but then they have had multiple costumes for each character. And as long as you're, then if you're juggling between characters, I find that pretty satisfying personally. I'd rather have that than, you know, Captain America with like a funny hat. is my approach to it. But the Diablo Marvel game that was an Ultimate Alliance, you know, they experimented with different versions of that too. I think it's a tall order. And I think if it is a games as service style game or a Division style game, it's from a publisher that does not have tons of experience with that. And I think,
is it Crystal Dynamics that's doing it, Anthony? Is that right?
I believe it's the Deus Ex people.
Oh, right.
I'm pretty sure it's Eidos Montreal.
Montreal, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious. I'm optimistic. I love the IP, certainly. I think everybody does, you know, based on the MCU. And if done well, I think it can be great. But I think there are a lot of pitfalls in that genre. Again, I'm making assumptions that it is that style of game, that things like Anthem and even the Division 2, it missed targets. And I know, Jeff, you've been busy with stuff, but I haven't heard you talk about that game at all.
Yeah, no, you're right. I was so excited for it to come out, and it did not get its hooks in me. And my whole group that had played the first game didn't really jump onto this one, so I didn't really either, and have been doing other things. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm excited for this one. Are there other games that you guys are expecting at E3? Are there any surprises that you guys would predict, Christian?
I want Rocksteady, but I don't know if I expect it. Yeah. But I love Rocksteady games.
Every year, right? That's what we're hoping for.
You haven't seen or heard anything from them. So I think that would be something very exciting. I want to see something from Insomniac. I don't care if it's a VR game, a Spider-Man potential DLC. I know there is a VR game. I know there is. I'm something new, right? Like,
yeah.
And I'm excited to go hands on or eyes on, you know, get some playtime with what's that game? Their VR game.
Storm something. Storm
Forge or Storm Lightning.
No,
or
Storm something.
Yeah. It looks
really good. Yeah. I played it at GDC. It's awesome.
Yeah. I'd like to see something from them. And then I think outside of kind of those big publishers, my favorite part of E3 is finding like the little game. Like that's where Counterspy I stumbled upon. I loved that game when it came out on PlayStation.
Stormland.
Cool. Totally not generic. so I'm hoping IndieCade has something that kind of blows me away. And that's kind of why for me personally, I'm going to miss the Sony show floor space, as I felt like in years past, they had a lot of those smaller games with demo stations there hands-on. But like, you know, Cuphead, not changing to Microsoft, blew me away 5 years ago. Everything was 5 years ago, and that was first shown. I'm excited to see that kind of game. And I'm hopeful there's still room for those types of games at this year's E3.
Anthony, last word, any other predictions or
the
hopes?
From Software game. I'm an idiot. That's the one.
Oh, the one with George R. R. Martin?
Yeah.
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 Great Rune.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think of the unknown quantities, that's the one I would be most curious to see. This year, it's largely just like a lot of things we know about, and I want to know if I'm going to be able to play them soon or I'm going to have to wait, because I'd like to fill out more of the back half of this year with some video games to be excited about outside of, you know, like 4 or 5.
Right.
You know, I'd like to start hearing some like, okay, this is coming out, this is coming out, this is coming out, because I assume that's what we're going to get a lot of. And it's going to be a lot of stuff we already know is coming out.
Yeah. I already said that I think my game of show might be that Avengers game. You guys want to predict what your game of show might be? Of the stuff we know, hopefully there's a cool big surprise that we can all get super jazzed about. But of the things that you expect, what do you think you'll come away most excited for, Anthony?
Man, I might say Cyberpunk again.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah, I guess they're showing lots more of it. So
Yeah. I mean, of the things we know, yeah, I think that's it.
Christian?
I'm hopeful that Control is playable. I have not gone hands-on with Control. I know that our thoughts are different about that game, Jeff, but I'm still very enticed by that game. And it's hard not to have it be Pokemon Sword or Shield. That game looked great. And all I need to play and be like, yep, it's a big new Pokemon. And it comes out like 2 weeks after E3, but Super Mario Maker, like, can that be my game, my game of show, even though I'm buying it 2 weeks later. I'm very excited, and I'm curious to see what those surprises will be that will blow people away. Cause I think Microsoft is going to have something that's going to blow me away. And I don't know what it is. And I find that very exciting.
Boy, I sure hope that new Fable game is there. And yeah, I hope that new Fable game is amazing, because I dug Fable 1 and 2 for what they were. And I think there's a potential for that franchise to really come into its own again. So, oh man, it'll be fun. Next week, we will be talking E3. It'll be amazing. Christian and I haven't really talked. I think we might do our normal extra episode, but we'll find out. But yeah, stay tuned, and we will be talking lots more E3. But let's get into the games that are out now and that we're enjoying now with our playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Anthony, you have some juicy, juicy games on your list. Where would you like to start?
Let's start with Outer Wilds.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest. I'm really curious. I've heard such amazing things about Outer Wilds. Are you digging it?
It is very, very cool. It is maybe not the type of game for me, but I still really, really have been enjoying playing it. This is not Outer Worlds. Every time I say Outer Wilds, everybody's like, oh, that's that game from the... No, it's
unfortunate, right? Yeah. Unfortunate. Outer Wilds and Outer Worlds are both happening very, very close to one another. And I don't think that helps either of those games.
No,
I think that's a bad. Yeah.
So the basic premise of the game is you are a space explorer alien. You are on your home planet, and all of the aliens that live on your home planet are very fascinated by space and the idea of exploring the kind of small solar system you live in. I don't know if it expands beyond that. I haven't got that far to be able to find that out, but it's very guided. You know, it has a lot of elements that will help tell you where to go, but essentially what you're doing early on and for the first couple bit is you are getting on a spaceship, you're taking off a la No Man's Sky, but without as much travel time. It doesn't try and create this kind of realistic, like, you know, exiting atmosphere, entering space, entering. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more kind of arcadey, if that's the best way to describe it. But what you're doing is kind of landing on new planets or asteroids or just like, you know, space bodies, and finding different things to interact with. Sometimes they're like little buildings. Sometimes it's like ruins. Sometimes it's just some people are there. Some other aliens from your race are there. And you can find them using a bunch of different tools, or you have a kind of language translator that will decode a older language. And so there was like a past race that was messing around in your solar system, and they've got some mysterious things going on. So you'll find some text that's it's not actual text. It's like kind of curvy drawings, but then you decode it into text and it'll say like, oh, we went here, or we did this. And then you'll get an update on your journal that will say, okay, they said that they went here. And then you find that planet or that place in the solar system. You go there, you, you know, interact with some stuff, and then you continue on. But at the same time, you're doing like, not, I don't know, the comparison that I see a lot, and I think it is apt, is The Witness, but it's not The Witness puzzles, but it's that type of idea of like, you need to kind of look at everything and kind of take it in and look at the puzzles and say like, well, I don't know what I'm doing, but if I just sit here and process, I'll eventually come up with a solution. But it's really neat and really different. And I think that there are going to be a ton of people that dig it. And it's available on Game Pass, so you can try it out if you have Game Pass.
Yeah, I'm super excited to give it a shot. I've heard such rave reviews from so many people about how special a game it is. And it, honestly, because of the confusion between Outer Worlds and Outer Wilds, I thought, oh, this is the one I'm not interested in of those two. And I sort of dismissed it in my head. And I think that was an error on my part. I'm really curious about it.
Yeah, I highly recommend just even if because that you'll definitely like if you watch videos, it might not even seem like it is interesting to you, but it is. If you are one of those people that kind of looked at a game like No Man's Sky and said that kind of seems interesting, but I'm a little, overwhelmed by the idea of so much freedom. This does it a lot better. It's a lot more focused. It's a lot more guided if you want it to be. Or you could just explore. Mm-hmm. And it's the art style is really cool. It's kind of like a kind of cartoony. It does remind me of The Witness as far as it's like use of color. And it's super clever. The only, kind of thing that's not keeping me continuously playing it besides another game on my list is it's not in a genre that I particularly care for. So it's just not drawing me in there, but I think that there are going to be a ton of people that will see this game and you'll love it.
Again, that's Outer Wilds and it's available on everything, I think. And you said it's on Game Pass too. So you have that.
I don't think it's on PS4.
Is it? Oh, is it not? Oh, that's right. Game Pass probably isn't exclusive then. Yeah. I should have checked that. Also, you referenced a game that has captured your imagination. Am I correct in guessing that's Void Bastards?
Yes, that's the one. That's the one that I'm obsessed with.
So I have been playing that this week as well. Let's talk a little bit about Void Bastards, which is a game actually that reminds me a lot of another game I love that I just discovered recently, which is SteamWorld Heist. Void Bastards actually has a lot of the same sort of DNA. It is a game. This is a first-person game, and obviously the SteamWorld game is not. But a very comic book aesthetic, which is really cool. Totally dig that. Looks a lot like that old game 13, which is getting a remake. And you are in space, and you are going from place to place trying to find certain items, but it's a survival game in the sense that you can only go so far and last so long without getting other kinds of resources. So you're forced to stop at other space stations and fight enemies or not. You can just avoid them and try to loot places. And it's got a bunch of really interesting interactions with the stuff that you can craft and the stuff that you can build and the things that you can find. A really inventive, different kind of approach. It's got DNA of Rogue Legacy and other roguelikes. Like it's got this thing where you start every time you die, you get a new body. And just like Rogue Legacy, you get some weird quirk to your character. Tell me what is it about this game that has sucked you in so fully?
I'm a huge fan of the run-based games that do a good job of giving you a sense of progress. You know, even if you died early on, I like the idea that, okay, I did die, but I had one goal in mind and I did that and I'm okay. Versus like certain games, it's kind of like all or nothing. It's either, right. Okay, my goal is I got to beat this boss so I can unlock this. But if I don't beat that boss,
This run was useless.
Yeah, this run was useless. And so one of the things that I do like about the game is you can go for these different like parts, and those are on various spaceships, and you can even target a specific part and it'll tell you what spaceship has it. And so you can kind of like go after it and just like put all your focus towards that, even like sacrifice fuel and food, because every time you travel to a different spaceship, you waste one unit of fuel and one unit of food, unless you have upgrades. But so you can kind of say like, well, I'm not doing a great job with, you know, damage. So I want to upgrade my pistol, or I want to upgrade like my zapper, which helps disable electronic stuff. And you can put your effort towards the part that upgrades that, get that, and then just think, okay, everything after that is gravy. I have this upgrade. And then the next time you go back through, you feel slightly more powerful. Sometimes you feel even like, you know, like you made a huge jump in terms of progress. And so, yeah, that's what I really, really like about the game, is it always kind of has these new carrots you can create for yourself to kind of go forward. And you're not even worried about the overarching goals as much as just like the sub goals. And then all of a sudden you find yourself saying like, oh, I'm one jump away from the actual thing I'm supposed to get to progress the story, the quote unquote story. And it just does such a good job of like sucking you back in, that I think is really indicative of the more popular run based games, is that they have that really addictive nature, and this 100% has it.
Yeah, it's really well made, and I think it's still in early access, right? It's not even a full release yet.
I think it's out.
Is it out?
I think it's out. I could be wrong. I don't know about that.
Anyway,
when our game's out, right?
Right, yeah.
Can I play it? Yeah, is it out? No, it is not out.
The lines are blurry.
I beat it. It's not out yet, though, but I finished it, and it's incredible. It's my game of the year. It's not out until 2020.
Yeah. You're describing Slay the Spire for me. Void Bastards is very well made, and I really dig the aesthetic, that the fact that you see sound effects in a comic booky way. You know, you can imagine something like Into the Spider-Verse, the way it's moving, but it's still a comic book page. That's the aesthetic here. Very clever. You can walk up to a door and you'll hear something deadly moving on the other side of it, because it'll make like splick, splack, splock, splock. Words actually appear.
All the different enemies have different
sound effects,
movement noises. Yeah. So yeah, you can say like, oh, there's a screw on the other side of that. Not opening that door. You could also lock the door.
Right. Yeah, and the interactions, the level of complexity with interactions, you're able to build this thing that actually opens portals, and you can portal things from one place to another. You can take over turrets. You can people are describing it as like BioShock without a story. I don't really feel it's very BioShocky to me, but I understand the idea that people are referencing. Where
was that team as well, or ex members of that team?
Yeah. But it's got that sense, you know, in BioShock, where you would sort of think laterally about how to deal with something, and the game allows for that. And I think that's really the thing that I admire most about it. I still prefer this kind of game in a format that isn't a first person shooter. I just find the first person shooteriness of it less than exciting in this kind of template. I much prefer the side scroller or the turn-based version, or there's a lot of games that are sort of doing what this game is doing in a different way. It's got DNA of FTL in it. It's got a lot of these kinds of games are coalescing, and people are figuring them out. And this game does everything right. It just hasn't gotten its hooks into me the way it has to you, just because I'm not as in love with interacting with this world in a first-person shooter format. But
sure,
man, seeing the upgrade trees, the crafting trees, and being able to go, oh, I built this, and now it's showing me the next three other things that I can go for. And I go, oh, man, that sounds really cool. I'm going to figure out how to get to that. All of that roguelike progression-based, as you say, run games, those hooks are very, very compelling of, oh, wow, there's really cool stuff to shoot for, really cool stuff to try for. And yeah, you do feel like death doesn't really set you back too much, which I also enjoy in a Rogue Legacy kind of way. So it's a pretty impressive game.
It is. I was actually not even that interested in playing it, and people kind of raved about it. I said, okay, give it a try. It's also on Game Pass, so if you have Game Pass, you know, you might as well try it. But yeah, I just gave it a try. Like you said, it. First person shooter in this genre, not really for me, but I played it and was like, wow, this is actually, I'm kind of feeling a little addicted. And then, yeah, playing over the weekend, I just got real sucked in. I couldn't stop, you know, even when I was setting those little mini goals. Yeah, I could still just see myself playing endlessly and doing more of the game, you know, completing those upgrades and getting more and more and more, and not even worrying about the main thing. But I will say that I'm playing on Xbox and the shooting is not, it's a little like retro. Hmm. It kind of reminds you of like, there's no ADSing. So it's a little more in tune with like a Doom or something like that, where you're not going to be as precise as you might want to be, especially if you're playing on controller.
Yeah. It's a shooter that de-emphasizes the shooting. It doesn't really hang its hat on the shooting. And that's fine, because there's a lot of ways to deal with enemies that aren't about that, but you do a lot of shooting also. So anyway, very much a game worth taking note of. Void Bastards.
Does the name have anything to do with the game? I know that it's not the worst word in the world, and I am one who curses, but I find it odd. Like, it seems like such an aggressive name for a game that maybe isn't that. Am I overthinking it?
Yeah, so I mean, the basics is that your person that you're controlling each time, or you're playing as, is a prisoner in this prison called the Void Ark. So these are kind of terrible people who are being sent out to do. You're basically being sent out to do like busy work that will, I assume, amount to nothing.
You're basically a backpack. You're playing this game as a backpack. And the backpack attaches itself to new hosts every time you die and controls them. And those hosts are terrible people. So, yeah.
Yeah, could it be a better title? 100%. Does the game justify the title? A little.
Got it.
All right, you have one more that you want to bring up?
Me, I mean, we could talk about Layers of Fear 2.
Is it good?
I think not really.
Then we don't need to talk about it.
Fair enough.
Layers of Fear 2, you did not enjoy.
Did not enjoy. If you like the first one, you'll probably enjoy this one. I did not like the first one.
Fair enough. Christian Spicer, what have you been playing? What's on your playlist?
Nothing we need to talk about much right now. We'll get to it later. The thing I've been playing more of. But the trailer, the Shang Tsung trailer for Mortal Kombat 11 got me back into Mortal Kombat 11. And I still really enjoy my time with that game. I'm excited to see more of the other characters that they announced. And even Spawn. I'm excited to see Spawn come to the game. That new combat fighter pass is what got me to pick it up. So we don't need to spend a lot of time with it. The characters aren't in the game yet, but when they are, I'm sure I will talk about it more then.
It's kind of funny that Spawn's still a thing. I mean, I guess he's still a thing.
Yeah, he's definitely still a thing. Todd McFarlane did the art for, I think, the latest, you know, whatever. I think what Spawn started, 5 years ago?
So well done.
He did the cover art for like an anniversary issue. It is very much, it's a character that's been rebooted more than you or I would know. But remained strong because it still looks cool, and the idea of him is very cool.
Supposedly, that movie is maybe happening. But McFarlane said, if you don't use my script exactly as I wrote it, we're not making it.
Kudos to him.
I guess.
No,
I guess.
Go watch the old HBO animated show. I think it's five episodes. Don't watch it with kids, but it's excellent. It's really excellent.
All right. Well, if you're like me, Christian, the majority of what you did this week was in VR. We're in beautiful VR times. So let's get to that. Virtual reality. VR. All three of us have been playing a lot of VR. I mean, this is the second coming of the VR. So many people have sent me notes about Oculus Quest. We got a few people raving. I got this email from Jason, who said, I want to share my Oculus Quest review. Like a lot of your listeners, I used to be way more hardcore into gaming than I am now due to other commitments. But one thing I don't have time for is the hassle of setting up, configuring, waiting for updates, load screens, or other things that impede my gaming experience. I think that is why Nintendo Switch is seeing so much action. Its pickup and go-ness makes it so that within 5 seconds, I'm continuing that Dead Cells run or collecting some loot in some other confined indie experience. This is what VR needs, something where there's no hassle and has well-defined experiences that people with other commitments can actually finish. Also, at the price point of being, $400 here in the US, it's no different than a console compared to buying and maintaining a high-end gaming rig. But the very, very, very best thing about Oculus Quest is the wireless RoomScape, bringing it to your mate that happens to have a huge open space, and watching their mind melt when you play Super Hot Untethered is priceless. I think there'll be more people who take the leap into VR now. Thanks for the years of VR talk. I finally understand what all the fuss was about. That's Jason. And he also wants to recommend a band to you, Christian, called Tusky. Do you know them?
He says, I have not heard of them, but I've added them to my Apple Music, which I guess that's tomorrow too, is the Apple conference. I don't know if we'll get stuff about Apple Arcade. Anyway, neither here nor there, but thank you for the recommendation.
So much. Yes. And we also got an email on the other end of the spectrum. This one comes from Rich Wynn, who says, I'm glad you guys were lucky enough to get working Oculus Quest. Unfortunately, I wasn't so lucky. He bought the 128 gig model from Amazon for $500 and it stopped working on him. And he opened a ticket with Oculus support that day. He said, I got a reply pretty quickly, but basically they said I'd have to send it to them and they'd send me a replacement in 10 to 12 business days after they received it. And then he didn't get anything in the mail, tried to contact with them again. He's had a horrible time of it. And he said, I wanted to send this to you guys because I know you both are really impressed with yours, but it seems there are many people having issues with their Quest and Rift S units. Oculus support does not seem to be able to deal with the volume either. It may be good to let listeners know that there are issues and getting support is difficult. It may be better to hold off until Oculus fixes their issues. That's from Rich. I haven't heard, anything from just, anecdotally from the people that I know, but I feel for you, Rich. That is a terrible situation. Very frustrating. I would be very angry if it were me. So hopefully that is not happening too often. But Christian and I have been both super excited about ours, but that's not really even the biggest.
Well, can I mention one thing before we talk about the thing we've all been playing?
Sure,
we didn't talk about it last week and you and I both kicked ourselves.
We did. We were both mad that we didn't bring it up. Go ahead.
Beat Saber has a campaign now, which came out. It's on every iteration of Beat Saber, or is if it's not on all of them, it's coming very soon. And it's incredible, and it's lengthy, and I feel like I had played a bunch of it, and I was like, I bet I'm close to being done with this campaign. Let me scroll up, and oh my gosh, there's so much more campaign. If you are considering Beat Saber and just the idea of playing one-offs or playlist, you kind of wanted progression, I highly recommend Beat Saber for its campaign. It really kind of guides you through the progression of the game and gets going into the good stuff pretty quickly. And I think it's really, really well done.
Yeah, I was very excited to see campaign added to that game. But I am a little bummed that it forces you to start the campaign on the easy mode, on the easy setting. And I know that's what the campaign is about, progressing you up to being amazing. But it feels like I wish I could have a little more challenge right at the beginning.
If only could read your save file and was like, look, we hit it. You've had this game for a year. We're going to start at level 15 and you can say yes or no.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It is very, very long campaign, which is good. That's what you want. You want a reason to keep coming back other than just your daily exercise. All right, but we're bearing the lead here because a really major release came out in the VR world this week. Blood and Truth was released on the PlayStation VR platform, and all three of us have played it. This is the extension of what was originally the London Heist demo for PlayStation VR. Now it is the full game Blood and Truth, which is a big, long, cinematic shooter with a story. It's sort of like if you stepped into Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels or The Heist or something like that. And I've just been in love with this game. Anthony, what is your feeling about Blood and Truth?
I mean, it's exactly what I wanted when I played the London demo and was like, man, they should just make expand on this times 1,000. And they did exactly that. It's really cool. It's easily one of my favorite PlayStation VR experiences.
Yeah, I think it's one of the top tier VR experiences on any platform. It bums me out that it is shackled to PlayStation VR because it really deserves to be on better hardware. Really, my only complaints with this game are tracking issues and frustrations I have with the PlayStation VR hardware in general.
Yeah,
just because I'm used to these other better solutions now, especially here we are in Gen 2. But man, this game is the thing that I've been wanting from VR. We've gotten a little taste of it with games like Lone Echo and others. But this is really that proof that watching a cutscene in VR is way better than watching a cutscene on a 2D screen. It is showing how you can do storytelling, you can do very cinematic, incredible moments in VR, and create a really compelling cinematic experience. I mean, I think PlayStation VR owners got a taste of it with Rocksteady's Batman VR, and you went, "Oh my gosh, the potential for this for a full length game." Here is that full length game. Christian, what do you think about Blood and Truth?
It's on my short list for favorite game of the year, and we'll see what the back half of the year delivers. But I think it's incredible, and I love what it does with giving you a feeling of presence. And there are moments in games, and like an action movie, right, where it's like title scenes or credits are kind of flashing, and then like it's a short vignette of something, and it's like, you know, like in Mission Impossible, it's like the fuse is burning, and then you see like Tom Cruise running, and then the fuse is burning, and he's jumping on a plane. Like, it kind of does things like that, and you're like, oh, I'm in this place, and you're like, oh, this is really cool. You start looking around, and then it's like, you know, back into setting you up for the like title credits, and you're like, then you're somewhere else. And the way the game first opens with the way you feel as if you're sitting in this place and location, and there's not much to do but really explore for a minute. Like, it's very smart about its design as a VR game and how it sets things up and the pacing of things that, you know, would feel flat on a traditional flat display. And then this is very early in the game, but there's a moment where you're talking to someone and it like, it knows that you're looking at the person, and your character's like, come on, dude, will you sit down? My neck's getting sore. Because sure enough, you're like, you're craned around trying to look at what this person's trying to show you and tell you, which is really cool. And I'm sure they play tested the game, you know, some of these sequences, but there's a, cause I imagine enough people did a thing that it has VO for it. There's a scene early in the game where, you're handed something, and
dude, that was going to bring up the exact same moment. I wonder if you did the same thing I did.
Well, I did something, you know, very dismissive with it, and the game immediately picked it up. And the beauty of this game in those moments,
I think we should just say it, because
I don't want to say it, because it was such an incredible moment.
I do want to say it. I think people can skip it, because I'm sure 90% of the people listening to this aren't going to get to play this game. And it's a cool moment, and it is really a small moment. It has nothing to do with the big version of the game. And I bet there's plenty of people that did play that moment that don't even know you could do what we did.
For someone who doesn't watch trailers, you're about to spoil something. Give it a spoiler tag.
You can easily skip forward 30 seconds a minute at most, but you're driving in a convertible and one of the characters hands you a vape pen and goes, "Hey, dude, try this." And I went, "I don't want to try your dumb vape pen, dude." And I took it from him and I threw it out of the convertible. And he goes, "Aw, man, don't do that." And I was like, "Okay, game, I love you. I love you, game. I love you." That just the acknowledgement that you could do that, and it didn't wait for you and force you, like stick it in your hand or force you to do the thing before moving on. It went, "No, you don't want to do that. You threw it out the thing. The guy's going to react to it." Is that what you did as well, Christian?
Yeah, and that's not what you have to do.
No, not at all. You could. I don't even know what happens if you actually do it, but you can do the pen. So, anyway.
All right, we're out of spoiler mode.
Yeah. I mean, there's another moment. It's not a spoiler, but there's a moment where a guy wants to take a selfie with you, and I found myself like leaning in and smiling, and I was like, "Oh, well, you know, you're immersed when you're leaning in and smiling to a fake selfie in a video game." Yeah.
And so I really love those moments, and I love the way it allows you just to be in a space. It doesn't rush you through cutscenes. You're interacting with these characters. They're well acted and well voiced and well animated. And then to me, this game represents what I wanted Virtua Cop to be when I was a kid, or what I felt like I was playing Virtua Cop as a kid, or like Time Crisis in the arcade, where you step on the pedal to duck behind cover, and that felt cool because you were holding the plastic gun, and like, you know, I think it was down to reload. Like the way this game, again, do I wish it was on Quest? Yes. But I'm going to stop acknowledging that because I'm playing in the reality it's in. The way it works within the confines of PlayStation VR, I think, are super smart with how your movement is limited, and to the way you do interact and move in the world. And the little touches when it sets you up with creating where your chest is for your ammo clips, like it goes through dialing that in, where your back is for the gun you have behind you is really smart, where your hips are. It kind of lets you dial all that in right for you in your seated position. And it works so well, you know, 99% of the time, or 95% of the time, and I think no fault of the games, where you're just not thinking about it, grabbing a clip from your chest, slamming it into the bottom of your gun, or flipping your shotgun open, grabbing two shells in, and then taking the move controller and flipping it back up to lock the barrel. It is an amusement ride, and it's incredible.
People don't, I say this all the time about VR games, and I still don't think people really understand how mundane physical mechanical actions in VR are so satisfying. It is a
lock picking,
manipulating something, reaching out and grabbing something and yanking it and breaking it, snipping something with wire cutters or something. This game understands that, and I think a lot of VR developers understand that just the pure physicality of manipulating objects in a 3D space in VR is very, very satisfying. And it's a new kind of experience for gamers. It's not, you know, using your mouse and pushing a mouse button to do a thing is not the same as reaching out with your hand and grabbing something and squeezing. It does feel fun. It may sound really insignificant, but it isn't. It's significant.
And oh, go ahead.
No, that's all.
And the way it puts you in a space is different, where I find myself role-playing in ways that I otherwise wouldn't. I'll speak vaguely, but there's a moment where I had to bust through something to get to another thing, and I'm in the moment. I put my hands up.
Yeah,
you know, and I see my – and I don't know – I don't think it changes anything if my hands are down. I don't think my face becomes lacerated and I bleed out, but I put my hands up, and there's a moment –
feels cool, though. It feels awesome. You feel like you're in that action moment. Yeah.
It feels like I'm the person doing that. There's a moment later, too, where you're like jumping across things, and I reached out and I grabbed onto something. And at no point does the game say, like, grab onto this. And I'd assume that if I didn't, maybe it would auto grab me. I don't know, because I did it. And I think that's really a testament to the game and its design and how it puts you into this space and its use of slow motion when, like, you shoot a fire extinguisher or whatever, and it blows up and explodes, and like everything slows down. Like you are in that action movie, and you can then pop off extra shots to take out these other thugs around the world. It's so smartly designed and implementing, I think, the strengths of VR that if you own a PlayStation VR, it's a must play, an absolute must play.
Yeah. The Astrobot Rescue Mission, Blood and Truth. These are, you know, Beat Saber, the usual gallery, but this is right alongside that. Like this is why you bought a PlayStation VR, for this kind of experience. The other thing about how smartly designed it is, I find it super interesting that they decided to make the entire game intentionally have you be seated, because a lot of these games, if it's like, well, we're giving you this immersive experience, you know, like Farpoint, for example, it assumes that you're standing and moving around and stuff. This game, you are shooting, you are doing physical things, but it actually expects you to be seated throughout the entire experience, which is interesting. I don't mean this to be disrespectful in any way, so please forgive me if it does. But it did. There were moments where I felt like I was in a wheelchair, like I was this wheelchair bound assassin, and it was kind of rad. But I don't know if you played with the comfort mode on. I played with it off. So everything is smooth movement, but it controls – you're basically moving node to node, point to point, as you mentioned, kind of like Time Crisis or one of those games. But you select which node to go to by looking at it and pushing a button. And you move smoothly. So it does feel almost like you're in a wheelchair or on roller skates or something. And it's an interesting sensation. I don't know of any other game that quite does it like this, but it – And I had my doubts whether it was going to feel good to not have that freedom of going where I want. But man, it does. It feels really good. The firefights are still super intense and interesting. And I am deciding where to go and spinning my head all around and moving from place to place. And there are many really interesting action set pieces that do unexpected things with that setting, with that template. Blood and Truth, very good. Very good game.
Yeah, I played with comfort mode on. I did not have that same sensation you had. To me, that feeling sitting made it feel more like an amusement ride, which I liked. I liked that feeling of like, I am playing this game of this awesome action experience. It felt like, you know, I was in Toy Story Arcade at California Adventure, or like on the best Star Wars ride. It felt like, yeah, I'm role playing and I'm having fun as this awesome, you know, criminal underworld killer or whatever, but also playing an action movie. And I really like that experience. And again, I think it was them playing to the limitations of PSVR and not trying to have you do too much, which I think is smart. Dude, I talked about this at E3. I think it was last year when I played a demo level, but there was a moment in the game that I happened again when I was fully playing it, where a guy pops up and threw a grenade at me. And I caught the grenade in the air, threw it across the way, not to where he was, but to where an outgroup of three other dudes was. And then I pulled a semi-automatic gun off of my back, took out that guy. And then as the grenade exploded, it took out this batch of guys. They fell down, busted out barricades, revealing an explosive canister or whatever. I popped that and three more dudes flew dead. And then I just walked to the end of the level. I was just like, these moments are what make the game so special.
But I hope Call of Duty has a conscience.
I mean, but I understand it. The difference is Blood and Truth didn't tell me that's what it was trying to do.
I agree. I just wanted to acknowledge what I'm sure some viewers and the difference is you did all those things physically with your hands and arms. You didn't just push some buttons on a mouse. You actually felt like you were catching a thing, felt like you were throwing a thing. I mean, I think I spent 40 minutes trying to get a crumpled up piece of paper to go into
all of those basketball hoops.
Oh, that's another thing that I think is so clever about this game. It has you collect these stars by doing all kinds of random weird things that are hidden in the levels, and then the stars allow you to get better cool stuff. But it's super fun keeping an eye out for these extra bonus things that you can collect, you know, open a drawer, find a hidden thing, or shoot a target that's hidden in a level, or, you know, throw crumpled paper into a basketball hoop. So it's just a really great, fun VR game.
Anthony, as people have added it to their carts hearing Jeff and I talk, do you want to tell them why they shouldn't purchase it, or do you agree and they should click purchase?
You should click purchase.
I mean,
if you own a PlayStation VR, it is a game that must be played. Like, there aren't a lot of them, but 100% this goes in the yes play pile.
Well, it's unanimous. Blood and Truth is a home run. I just want, you know, I love the fact that Sony is creating these incredible VR experiences. I just wish I could play them on better hardware.
Yes. I love these studios, but I wish they made games for other headsets.
Yeah. All right. Well, my goodness, that's been a jam-packed episode. I have had so much fun. We do have parting gifts coming up, but Anthony Taormina, thank you for being here for our annual E3 prep.
Yes, thank you for having me. I look forward to getting the firsthand reactions from you, Jeff, press conferences.
I look forward to standing in various
There's no PlayStation press conference, so we're all good.
Yeah, that's true. Where can people keep up with you and your work online?
So I will be attending E3 representing Game Rant at GameRant.com. You can read all of our coverage. I'm hands-on and down in Los Angeles doing the E3, you know, in amongst the people. But, you know, any sort of trailer drops and stuff, we'll have coverage there. If you want to read it, I would greatly appreciate it. You can also follow me on Twitter at AntTormina, AntTormina.
Christian Spicer, how about you? What's going on this week?
It's same. It's E3. It's choo-choo. It's definitely E3. Twitter is the best way to kind of keep in touch for hot takes and stuff like that, at Spicer. And again, I don't have a schedule yet, but streaming the stuff for St. Jude makes me want to do more of it. So if you want, I stream this show pretty much every week at 7:15 Pacific time on Sundays. And you can find that at twitch.tv/ChristianSpicer.
As for me, I'm on Twitter at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And I'm doing a Dungeons & Dragons show called The Dungeon Run. I'm super proud of it. I really am putting a ton of work into it, and I love it very much. People have been reacting very positively to it. I hope you give it a shot. I hope you check it out. You can watch it on YouTube if you go to the Caffeine YouTube page, or just search for The Dungeon Run on YouTube. We have 6 episodes so far. It's also an audio podcast, so anywhere you get this show, you can get an audio version of the show. Really amazing cast and a fun story. We did a crazy thing last week. It was a giant anime fight. It was wild. I hope you give it a shot. You can also watch it live Wednesday nights. That's really where the action is, because it's interactive. You can actually shape the story yourself by watching and participating in the chat. Wednesday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific time, at caffeine.tv/thedungeonrun. Also do the / filmcast. We talk about movies and TV shows. We're going to be talking about Godzilla.
Godzilla. King of the monsters.
We're doing Godzilla. Oh, he's so Godzilla. Godzilla, king of all monsters this week. Although I wish we were reviewing Godzilla. You can find that at /filmcast.com. And you can always email us here, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift. Anthony Taormina, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do. This Wednesday, I think, June 5th, is the new season of Black Mirror. Highly recommend watching Black Mirror. It's cool sci-fi, cool satire. Maybe a lot of people were exposed to it through Bandersnatch, which was kind of like the choose your own adventure, self-contained movie that Black Mirror made. But if you've never watched Black Mirror, I highly recommend either going back through Netflix's library and watching some of them, or if you have been watching it, the new season comes out this week. You can binge it. It's only like 3 episodes.
Yeah. Amazing. So excited for more episodes of Black Mirror. Great show. Great show. Christian Spicer, what's your parting gift?
If you're listening to this on Monday, the day it comes out, I would recommend watching the championship NCAA women's softball game. It is Monday is when the first game is played. Then it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It's a best of 3. It's UCLA versus Oklahoma. Full disclosure, I ended up coaching my daughter. She's young. The coach pitch softball team. And it was my first time coaching, her first time playing. I kind of got like, the league was like, we need another coach. And I was like, I'm not going to. And then I did it. And I loved it. It was an incredible experience.
So now you're hoping that she ends up in the World Series someday?
Maybe. I mean, we watched it. She expressed interest in it. Saw it was on. And I got hooked. It's the reason why I didn't play Void Bastards this weekend, is that we were watching College Softball World Series.
Nice.
It is such a fast game. Small, like the baseball is big field, small ball. Softball is small field, big ball. And to see these women, I mean, how fast these pitches come in and come off the bat at such a close distance, and how quickly the game can change. Today, Sunday's semifinal game of UCLA and Washington, I think it went 10 innings. UCLA won it. It was 0-0. They won it with ended up being a walk-off 3-run home run. But wow, these two pitchers, the UCLA pitcher, I think she pitched the complete game. Washington has one of the best pitchers in the country on their team and just lights out. And I think it's easy to be like, I'm not going to do that. Fine. I get it. My personal experiences brought me to it. I wasn't watching it before, but I am hooked on the game and how fast it is. And how quickly the game can change from moment to moment. So if you want to give it a shot, there's going to be high-level play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, as the NCAA championship is crowned between UCLA and Oklahoma.
Are all those women, the pitchers, do they all have rotator cuff injuries? It just seems so Crazy the way they pitch those. It's just insane.
So I mean, it is underhand pitch, and it is so fast. And I was learning of, you know, of all the different types of pitches that they're doing, a riser, sinker, still throwing curveballs and all this stuff. I was very ignorant to the game, and watching it and watching, of course, the best pitchers in college pitching. But yeah, I don't know. And I don't, if I were playing that game, I'd have a face mask on all the time. It yeah. is,
yeah.
That ball screams off the bat. And these women, the UCLA game today, in my head, I was like, oh, I'm going to go to my office and play some Voidmaster. I got to play it. I put it off all weekend. I got to play it. Then it went to extra innings, and the UCLA has a freshman that's just making incredible plays in the field. And this Washington pitcher was just lights out. It blew me away. Absolutely blew me away.
Well, we got a listener suggested parting gift. This comes from Rob Malone. Rob writes, a couple of weeks ago, Jeff mentioned the idea of creating something as his parting gift. And that inspired me to share my parting gift this week, which is the album California Rain by my friend Chad Gingrich. My friend Chad decided to get back into music and wrote and performed an album's worth of music. Talking with him about the process was beyond impressive, with the effort he put into making it, and it has inspired me to develop my own creative side. Chad is currently in the middle of a move from the West Coast to the East Coast and probably listening to DLC along the way. Ah, Chad, keep on trucking, man. Stay awake. It's a long drive. Thank you both for all that you do and for putting good things into the world. If anybody wants to check it out, he posted it on Spotify. Again, the album is called California Rain, written and performed by my friend Chad Gingrich. That comes from Rob. He sent it to dlcfeedback@gmail.com, where you can send your parting gifts as well. We certainly wish Chad luck with that album. Sounds cool. And you guys can find it on Spotify, California Rain. My parting gift is a show I know a lot of people have been liking for a long time, so I'm late to this party, but I've just started watching it, my wife and I, and I really, really like it. It's called Fleabag, and it is on Amazon Prime, I believe.
Yes, and yeah. BBC.
Right. Originally. BBC show, only 6 episodes per season. I think the 2 seasons now. We just watched the first season. This is a very adult show. Very, very, very adult show. First scene of the first episode is like, oh, I'm glad I didn't watch this while my mom was in town, because she's getting into town this week. But it is, it's very well written. It's very smart. Characters are really interesting. It's very dark, but funny. It has, I think episode 4, I believe, has a joke in it that I laughed at for a solid 2 minutes. My wife was like, are you okay? I was laughing so hard. And it's a really subtle thing. It was something that was written on a chalkboard in a silent retreat that the characters go on. And it made me laugh so hard. I really like the show. Like I said, very adult, very dark, but Fleabag. I recommend it if you it's half an hour episode, 6 of them per episode per season. So I'm excited for season 2.
Co-signed, but also co-signed on adult and all aspects of the word. It's
yes.
Cursing, situations, sexuality, nudity, all of that stuff. Be aware.
And also subject matter. Dense, yep. Dark subject matter about death. And, you know, it's funny, but it is a very dark adult show.
Yes.
I highly recommend it, though. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Anthony Taramina and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for hanging out with us live and making the show better in real time. We appreciate you. Thanks to our musical contributors, especially Sean Madigan this week. When we roll out that E3 bumper, I am always extra grateful for Sean Madigan and all of his contributions, including that one. But also Zero Star and Patrick L. for the bumpers that you hear. And thanks to all of you who download and listen to the show. It's going to be a big, exciting next couple of weeks as we talk about E3 and get excited. We will be here. I hope you will be here with us. We appreciate you listening. Until next week, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place. And I'll leave you with this. Chugga, 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 chugga.